This is a Beyond Cast Cerberus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastCerberus.com.
Welcome to the podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley and this is James McLean.
So it is.
It is, yes. And it's a podcast with a K. We're going to talk Doctor Who. It feels like we don't talk about Doctor Who very often, although for you, dear listener, it's a weekly thing. For us, it's kind of timey-wimey. So if some of this is stuff that you've heard before or you've read elsewhere, then that's tough because you know why you come here. You want to know what we think of it. I don't know where to start. There's a few things going on. We could talk about... Do you want to talk about the Christmas thing, James?
Or the Christmas sort of docu-trailer thing.
Yeah, there's that docu-trailer thing, isn't there? And then there's been a few things said about it by Moffat and Capaldi in the last few days.
I've not been following it in the last few days.
Okay, yeah.
Tell me about it.
Well, that's what I'll do right now. There's been a couple of reports come along, or video clips of Mr. Capaldi and Mr. Moffat, basically not saying an awful lot, not giving that much away, but sort of hinting at the Christmas special. So like the hero guy, his alter ego is a guy called Grant. But that's pretty much all we know. We don't know his surname or anything like that. They're basically not telling us anything. Typical kind of teasing PR thing going on, really.
So what do you feel the flavour is of the response to it?
I think it seems to be muted positivity.
Do you want to explain that to the listener, myself, and God?
You know how... I don't think anyone is think... From what I've seen... I don't think anyone is like, oh, this is a terrible idea. I think there's a kind of jury's out on it, really. That's what I think. Yes, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting a little old, a little inflexible, a little rigid.
Well, as we said last time when we were talking about the previous Christmases, and, we were hugely doubtful about last Christmas, weren't we? The episode Last Christmas, not Last Christmas. Without getting into that whole spiel of what we did last time again. That turned out to be a surprise. That turned out to be quite a strong episode, didn't it? So, we can't judge a book by its cover. I'm looking at a picture right now of the current Doctor Who magazine, which is Captain Jack wearing the Resurrection Gauntlet. I don't know if that's the correct title for it. And it... Really, I'm at risk of repeating myself here, so if anyone's read this, or if James has read this, I don't know. But it really looks like he's about to embark on some heavy-duty dressmaking. With these sort of thimbles over all his fingers.
Oh, I see. I think that's neatly cut down any dramatic... positioning that photo had. Nice. No, I think the problem is that you get years of this sort of backwards and forth, and you find things like with the Barrowman thing in his want to go back to Torchwood or to bring Torchwood back, you start to sort of get a bit jaded to it, and you just feel, another attempt to promote or to encourage news on that story, which you don't feel is going to happen. And the Christmas special just looks like the same tired ideas that might be good. But it's like, the superhero, I just feel a bit, it's just, I don't know. It feels so writer's room with two writers in it. What would be good? Oh, it's about superheroes are popular at the moment. It's just, I don't know. It just all feels a bit on the nose.
Yeah, no, I know.
Barrowman feels a bit on the nose at the moment, and
though, does it? But I know.
Yeah,
what
I mean, it could be good. I mean, the same, but it just feels on the nose. And I've not seen Class yet. I know you have, but I was kind of hoping there because the trailer felt a little different to the on the nose stuff. It seemed a little more ambiguous. I've not seen it, so I've no idea if it hits the mark or not. But I think that's why that just interested me a little more, because it just felt a little different. You know, I just think, you know, the problem with TV, and the reason that sort of TV shows start to die, is when you give the same thing every year and it becomes novelty. It becomes, you know, an advent calendar.
Yeah.
And I think Doctor Who, no matter how reasonable this one is, it sort of ends up feeling that way. It feels almost predictable. You know, you had a feeling that it would be something chirpy to do in this Christmas special, you know, superhero or Father Christmas. It's all the same sort of shallow icons, shallow novelty icons. And I know we've said this many years. I know Brian has said it many years in a run, but it's, you know, come on, can we just not have this silly lampooning lightness at Christmas? Can't you just do a story?
Would it maybe be a better idea to just abandon Christmas?
Or just do a story at Christmas. I just don't see this. I know it's part of this modelling of packaging.
Well, there's this idea that it has to be trivial, and, isn't there?
Yeah,
and inconsequential.
Just everyone's sitting around the table, eating their Christmas dinner, and you know, along there's got to be snow in there and a few Christmas references, so it feels all Christmassy. And I have no doubt that the BBC sort of asks for this stuff as well. I'm not just sort of pointing fingers at the showrunner particularly. I think it's part of that sort of institution that BBC Christmas needs to be celebrated, and that's just sort of become a little too rampant in Doctor Who, to a point where it just feels almost like an hour-long Children in Need special. And so you shouldn't really need to have to do that. It should just be able to do a story that which people will sit down. There's other things shown at Christmas. It doesn't suddenly have to be turned into Christmas stuff.
No, what you just said there about an extended Children in Need special, that's exactly how the Husbands of River Song felt.
Yes, it did.
It was just like a big gag, wasn't it?
It did, absolutely. I say, as we said, Last Christmas was a little different. There was a little more depth to Last Christmas, which, and a little more mystery, which just propelled it along. I mean, it did sort of, it was going down the old, you know, are they dreaming trope, but it sort of held itself reasonably well. It did a play on with Alien as well, and that sort of worked. And yeah, even having Santa in it worked. It had a good reason to be there, but it still again ended up with you heading towards this episode, which ended up being okay, feeling the same sort of, it's traditional, it's Christmas, here we go, this old rather conservative value that we must all be sitting with family around the fire waiting for Doctor Who with the Christmas tree. And I'm sure many people are, but many people aren't.
Yeah,
it feels very narrow-minded approach to a show which is meant to cater for everyone. I don't know. So yeah, I suddenly tonight it's just scraped a nerve. I'm sorry. It has. It's like last week. Last time I was like, okay, yeah, I can go with this. It might be good. But this time it's like, no. I'm just. Why am I bored? Why am I not interested in what Capaldi or Moffat has to say about the special? I should be interested. I should want to know. I should be motivated, and I'm not.
Okay.
It feels the same thing every year.
Well, let's try something else, because you might be motivated to display some feigned interest in.
Feigned is a good word.
Yes.
Carry on.
Tony Jones, who is a former Casterbris contributor, and he's also a current contributor at the Doctor Who Companion, and he's recently had his first Big Finish story.
Ooh.
So he's very helpfully for the listener and for anyone else interested, written a piece on how he wrote his October Short Trips rule book. It's called Rule Book for Big Finish. And there's a nice little article on the Doctor Who Companion, which anyone who's interested in having an opportunity writing for Big Finish, want to try their hand at that, it's worth them having a look at it to see what was involved.
That's a nice idea. I've not read it, so I can't comment on it, but I will read it.
Yes, you should.
So I like Tony's posts, so yeah.
Tony's a good writer. There's a nice little bit. He's sort of like first section on pitching. There's a myth on many forums that Big Finish aren't interested in new writers. This is far from true, as a look through the new Torchwood and many other ranges will tell you. And I will leave it to you, dear listener, to follow up on that. You'll find the link to that in the show notes, because it's a good read.
I mean, I think what is true, I mean, he's right, there is a falsehood there, but I think the mistake is that people assume that if they want to do a story, they'll run hoping that they can sort of get a full 90-minute play or a 90-minute show, you know, when in the end, a lot of the time, you know, you get your, whether it's in most media industries, you get your break by doing something smaller than that.
Yeah.
You know, a short trip or, you know, a future shock if it was 2000 AD. Yeah, you don't go straight on to draw Judge Dredd or write Judge Dredd. You have to show your colours, and that's what Tony's been doing. And I think that's the mistake a lot of I don't want to say wannabe writers because that sounds really insulting. Writers looking for a break.
Yeah.
I think that's a better way of putting it, because they might be actually writers anyway, like a lot of people are. Is to actually sort of gear expectations, and as Tony says, see what these companies have to offer, and don't presume. Yeah, I think that's really good. So don't bother reading Tony's article, because I think I've probably just covered it here.
No, do read it. It's certainly worth reading. I think you just put me in mind of an interesting statistic. Now, 2 or 3 years ago, there was a survey done. I think it was in 2014. 50% of authors, writers, in the UK. So that's magazine writers, book writers, non-fiction book writers, actual authors like your J.K. Rowling's, all the way down to, you know, people having their first go and never been published. The 50% of writers earn £12,000, £12,500 or less.
No, it doesn't surprise me. It's a saturated industry, and
it's quite worrying. I mean, I started off at about that sort of area back in 2010 when I went full time, and it's deeply concerning that people should be. Well, it's concerned. It's not just concerning. I mean, it is concerning and worrying, but at the same time, it's kind of pleasing in some ways that people decide that, yeah, actually, that's what they're going to have to do, because everything else just sort of like blows their mind, fries their head so much that they have to write. So that aspect to it's nice, but that's a bit romantic, really, because in the reality is that it is a very competitive area.
It is, yeah. Well, it's heavily saturated. You know, there's not always a horrendous amount of money going.
Yeah.
And it's getting the consistency of jobs is always a problem in sort of media spheres. It's the old actors trope, isn't it? You know, the time between jobs. And if you can get things regular, that's, you know, that's really key, regular and paid. But there's so many who will do stuff for free, and there's so many who will, companies who will shortchange. It is a really hard one.
Indeed.
So I'm not surprised, but yes, it is a shame at the same time.
Now, speaking of books, someone who hasn't had any trouble in making money or being busy, let's say staying busy. Let's not be, you know, I don't want to be uncouth about this. Keeping busy is Adam Hargreaves, who's the son of Roger Hargreaves.
Okay. Oh, yes, I know where you're going with this. Yeah.
So thank you. And a lot of people don't realise that he is the guy who's writing the Mr. Men now, because it always has Roger Hargreaves' name on the books. But lastly, it's also had Adam Hargreaves' name added in there. And there's a Doctor Who series of Mr. Men books coming along, isn't there?
Yes.
Which is, I had a little chat with Gareth about this earlier, and I'm struggling to get my head around it entirely. Because while I like it as a visual, it's a really good visual. You've got a sort of, you've got a slightly Mr. Topsy Turvy looking Fourth Doctor, you know. So you know that's good. You've got a Mr. Rush esque or Mr. Sporty esque 11th Doctor, with the necessary accessories. You've got Doctor First, who looks like Mr. Uppity, even down to having a monocle in, and a cane. And you've got Dr. 12th in with bother boots and sonic sunglasses, or sonic shades, or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
So, you know, visually, they're a good idea. But what I wonder is how they're actually going to work inside. Because the thing about Mr. Men books is that there's always a lesson to be learnt for the Mr. Man in particular, for that the story's about. So I do wonder how these stories are actually going to work. What lessons are these doctors going to learn? These Mr. Doctors, whatever they're called.
Well, the second doctor will learn not to listen to his agent. The fifth doctor will learn to just stay on one more season because it might change. Just think of his recent book, that's all. I don't know, but that's my point. It is very difficult to sort of... I'm not really sure there's anything William could have learned, apart from his lines, but, you know, obviously he had issues, so mentally, physical issues, so maybe that's a rather poor joke, but he could have remembered his lines.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's a difficult one. I get your point. I've not considered that, and it's a very good point. How do you actually, I mean, do you play to their, and this is, would be quite interesting to read one, maybe, is just to see, do they play to their own, I can't think of the word, begins with...
Strengths?
With H. No, hubris, sort of.
Right.
Things like, you know, the third doctor was overly inquisitive to a point which, you know, screwed him over in the end. That was sort of his, you know, Tom Baker's fourth doctor, I'm not sure what his would be. I mean, yeah, they don't really have many faults, do they, doctors, really?
Not really, no.
More recent ones, no, they don't. I suppose you could say the seventh doctor manipulating and meddling and trying to control things could work. But yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I don't know. I wonder whether in the end he ends up having to either betray the Mr. Men legacy, and I mean betray not in a sort of serious betray, but have to step back from that sort of format, or whether he has to sort of do something different that Doctor Who wouldn't do. Yeah, because either way, he's a bit screwed, isn't he?
Yeah, it is, yeah. We'll have to just wait and see how it turns out. I don't think they're up till next year, so...
Pictures look quite good, though. The cover shots are quite impressive. So,
I like the visuals, yeah.
It's a bit of fun.
It is. Okay, Charlie Brooker... The satirist has turned out to be the latest person who didn't write for Doctor Who.
Okay, fair enough.
He says he was approached when he was busy and didn't have time, and they never asked him again. So I suppose perhaps the lesson
was this before Black Mirror.
I suspect it was probably during the first series of writing it. It's the only thing that makes sense, really, in terms of him being busy.
Bet they regret not pushing him now.
There you go.
Big hit that.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about Dylan?
We could talk about Steve Dylan, yes. We do have a separate podcast that's just gone live today, dear listener. So it's gone live on Wednesday, the 26th of October, in which Gareth Cavanagh shares his recollections of meeting the late Steve Dylan. But that doesn't mean that we can't talk about Steve Dylan, who is instrumental in a lot of early Doctor Who comic books. Comic strips in the Doctor Who weekly days, the hand behind Absom Dark, among other things.
You see, I don't think you need to speak to Steve Dylan, because I think you can almost separate out the knowing of the person and the knowing of the artwork. And I never met Steve Dylan. I was a great admirer of his work from a very, very young age. And I think art is one of those sort of things, more so than acting or maybe, and even writing, which has its own identity, which is both very clear, where writing's is nuanced by and large, unless it's the Mr. Men, is very nuanced and doesn't really associate with the identity of the illustrator, of the comic artist. So in a way, I tend to find that art, especially in sort of narrative art, sort of takes on its own personality, which sort of makes the death of an artist, sort of an illustrator, doubly sad because you lose both those identities. I mean, obviously for someone appreciating the art, you don't need to know Steve Dylan for it. You don't need to have any association with him at all. In some ways, it might be better not to have any understanding of the artist and just be able to enjoy the identity of the work that's created. So, yeah, in a sort of flippant way, but in a sort of a fairly serious way as well, I think you can sort of you can mourn the passing of the artwork as much as you can mourn the passing of the person. And I think if you didn't know the person, it somehow feels more appropriate to mourn the passing of the artwork than a person that you don't really have the right to sort of have that sort of mourning, because you didn't know them and you know you're not part of that aspect. And it's just weird when you think that artwork, that sort of style, and his style was so very, very, it was a very weird style in the sense it was very, in some ways it was quite simple and quite straightforward. It wasn't elaborate, but it was so very distinctive. And I think it's weird to think that won't ever happen again, that you won't ever see any new material of that style. That style is gone, and that I find really quite... quite moving rather than distressing. I think what was nice about his artwork for Doctor Who is because it was done when he was so young. It was before, I think, he'd really found that balance. And I'm sure Gareth will probably know more about this than I do since he's spoken to him more. But it seemed to strike me that it was a point before he had found the balance between the working job and the style and the way to apply the style. So the early stuff was a far more detailed insofar as the inking and penciling went.
Well, there's an interesting insight that he shared with Gareth, which you'll be able to hear about, Dillis, if you listen to our other podcast that's gone live this week.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Under the Beyond Casterbridge banner, which he basically says that he felt that his early work was better.
I think it's less distinctive in a weird way. I think it is. I don't want to say more beautiful, because beautiful is a crap word, and I don't know whether it's a fair assessment.
Striking?
It is, well, yeah, but is it? Because in a sense, when he takes away the line work, the heavy line work that you'll see in Absalon Duck and various other early stuff he did, you take it away, it becomes in some way more striking, because you really get a feeling of the movement. The movement's so much more, because it's more outline. I mean, if you people who've read Preacher, so, you know, some of the stuff is quite shocking because it's in a way so simple, yet it's so visceral at the same time. When someone's mouth has been blown off by a shotgun, you know, he somehow really captures that. Yeah, his early work, there's a sort of beauty to it, isn't it? It's far more sort of traditional, I guess. It's a very traditional European approach, and I can see why he, you know, looks back and he sort of likes it. But that being said, there are some there's a page that Gareth put up on Facebook a while ago, which he said was one of his favorite pages from it was from Absalon Duck, actually. It was from the first story. And I must admit, I wasn't over keen on it. Some of that story I really like. He captures Daleks horrendously well. But there was a couple of frames in there that didn't seem quite as clear-cut and as confident as his later stuff becomes. So I'm a bit mixed on it. But yeah, I can see the appreciation on both sides.
Okay. So, Steve Dillon sadly died on the 22nd of October from a ruptured appendix.
Oh, it was a ruptured appendix, was it? I mean, at the time, no one knew, so it's a ruptured appendix. Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so unnecessary.
Yeah, especially in this day and age. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's terrible. Oh, what a shame.
We'll move on, and because there's something else of import that we should talk about. Okay, and this is Jon Pertwee. Who we he's possibly the Doctor we talk about the most on the podcast. I don't know if you realise this.
Is he? I don't know.
I think he gets the most mentions. Yeah.
How annoying.
Yeah. he's got a blue plaque.
Yes, I saw the story.
Thanks to DWAS, and it's been erected. At Wimbledon Theatre, and at a starry gathering on Sunday just gone, Pertwee's old friend Colin Baker, who's the Sixth Doctor, you may know, he's also you may not know that he's DWAS's current honorary president.
And, I did not know that. No.
Yeah, and he read out citations from actors who couldn't attend, such as Jim Dale.
Okay.
And Peter Capaldi. Capaldi.
Yeah, him.
Yeah, him, that guy. And other people were there. Katie Manning, John Levine, Richard Franklin, Terence Dix, some directors, Graham Harper, Michael Ferguson, Timothy Combe, and Peter Miles, Stephen Thorne, Bernard Holly, David Banks and Prentice Hancock. It's a right old lineup of former Doctor Who people, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also in the building, John Coleshaw and some actual comedy greats, such as June Whitfield, Barry Cryer, Fenella Fielding, Lorraine Chase, Derek Griffiths and Judy Cornwell. It's basically like a This Is Your Life for John Pertwee in absentia.
He had a This Is Your Life, didn't he?
I think he did, yeah. I don't remember it. I do remember the Tom Baker one. Do you remember the Tom Baker one?
I don't. I remember the Peter Davison one. I think they did the Peter Davison one.
Right. Well, the Tom Baker one, there was a moment when it was around the time of Who on Earth is Tom Baker? It was in that sort of mid to late 90s.
So it was fairly late, yeah.
Fairly late, yeah. And Aspel, who was hosting in those days, started talking about his time in the Catholic Church and becoming a monk and his relationship with God, and Baker goes, "He's not here, is he?" Very amusing in a Tom Baker delivery, not in a Christian Corley delivery, but yeah, I think it's on YouTube.
Fairly amusing. I'm sure it is.
Yeah, if you're of a mind to, then you should go and search it out, dear listener. James, does that bring us to the end of this week's Doctor Who podcast with a K?
I don't know. I will drop a can on the floor, a can of deodorant. If it rises unexpectedly back into my hand, then we will continue on.
Okay.
Oh, well, what do you know? Carrying on. Didn't see that coming.
No, we didn't, no.
No.
Well, we've reached the end of our planned discussion. And I should probably tell you, dear listener, that there's some other podcasts been done today. I've already recorded two with Gareth Cavanagh. One of them's the Steve Dillon chat, which we'll link to and which you should listen to. It's just a nice short 10-minute chat. There's also the latest edition of Coaction, which Gareth and myself talk about classic children's TV. It's pretty much a 40-year look at children's TV in the UK. And then there's this, which you're listening to now. And then we're hoping for another one that we're planning to record after this, although that does depend on our guest. So hopefully that'll be there for you to listen to. Now, the thing is, these will all be scattered across the calendar, and you may find it difficult to... you might find it interesting. You might find it a nice little game to kind of guess which podcasts were recorded on which day. And if you do fancy that game, then all you need to do is listen to my voice, which you'll notice is slightly bassier than usual. So there's a little Easter egg for you if you're an avid listener to all of our podcasts. I do think, however, that is the end of our Doctor Who conversation for this week. We're hoping to be back with some commentaries for you in the not too distant future, and I hope that James McLean
said, yeah.
Yep.
Sorry.
Good.
What about me?
And I'm hoping that James McLean and myself will be able to put some time aside to discuss the Doctor Who spin-off Class.
Yes.
At some point in the near and not too distant future.
Class.
Class, or Class, as I would say. Until next time, goodbye.